The uniqueness of God is this, that when he is massively offended, he still comes to the offenders and, warning them of the judgment to come, offers them forgiveness. It is that God who is hanging on the cross.
They make the difference between simply reading about the crucifixion and having a sense of being an eyewitness. I'm talking about the precise observations you find in the Word of God, but have you overlooked critical details about Calvary? To find out, stay with us for Grace to You as John MacArthur launches his study called The Crucifixion Chronicle. Before we get to the lesson, John, you're mainly going to focus on Luke's account of the crucifixion as a way of whetting people's appetite for what they are about to hear. Talk about some of the unique aspects that Luke focuses on. What does he bring to the story that the other gospel writers don't?
You know, I think in an overall sense, the history of the death of Christ that Luke writes is, of course, consistent with the other gospel writers that record the crucifixion. But Luke looks at it in a way that is often missed. We're going to be looking, as we prepare for Resurrection Sunday, at Luke's presentation of the crucifixion. But we're going to look at it under a very interesting title, The Comedy at Calvary. The Comedy at Calvary. You say, well, that sounds sacrilegious. But that is exactly what was going on. Jesus wasn't the comedian, but he was being mocked. The people were creating a kind of public visual joke in the way they were treating the Son of God. It isn't funny. It isn't anything to laugh at. But they were laughing at Jesus. They were mocking Jesus. Luke brings this out, and it adds a sort of profoundly ugly and disturbing kind of perspective to the crucifixion. It wasn't just what they did to him physically. It was how they mocked him with every aspect of that crucifixion. This is going to be a very, very powerful experience for all of you who stay with us for our series. The actual title is The Crucifixion Chronicle. But as we look at it in Luke 23, we're going to see how they viewed the death of Jesus as a joke. Important note, with Easter approaching, we're not going to stop with the story of the crucifixion. You want to be here Good Friday, April 14th, when we look at the resurrection cover-up. But first, a compelling look at what happened at Calvary. So here we go, launching into the Crucifixion Chronicle.
And a reminder, friend, if you'd like to hear this study in its entirety or listen to any of John's more than 3,000 sermons, they are all available free of charge at gty.org. Right now, stay with us as John MacArthur begins his look at the Crucifixion Chronicle and the comedy at Calvary.
Open your Bible, if you will, to Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23. I think I have a little explaining to do with regard to the title of the message, The Comedy at Calvary. It is a shocking idea. It is an irreverent notion. In fact, it is, on the surface, cruel and could well be considered blasphemous to think of Calvary as a comedy. And certainly, when you think of Calvary, you think of its horrors, its cruelties, its agonies. You do not think of it as a comedy, nor should you. I don't think of it as a comedy. But the people who participated in it when it happened turned it into a comedy. For them, Calvary was a joke. The classic dictionary definition of comedy is a ludicrous or farcical event. That's Webster. If you wanted a synonym for that definition of comedy, it might be satire, farce, parody, burlesque, vaudeville, or you might just call it a joke, a rather extended joke. And from the viewpoint of the crucifiers of Jesus, the whole event had been twisted into a perverted and extended joke. Truly it was, in their view, a comedy, and Jesus was the butt of the joke. What was the joke? "This is the King of the Jews." Laughable to them. Now remember, Jesus had already been stripped of his freedom when he was arrested, stripped of his rights when he was unjustly condemned, stripped of his friends when they all forsook him, stripped of his ministry. He had been stripped of his clothing down to a loincloth, but that was not enough. They were about to strip him of his life, but in the process, they wanted to make sure they stripped him of his honor and any respect that he might still possess. And so the execution of Jesus is designed to be one big laugh, comic satire. This is a king? Luke says very few words about the crucifixion. Very few. But says many words about the attitude of the people who were there. Scorn, sneering, mockery, sarcasm, all at the laughable King of the Jews. Now, obviously, from God's viewpoint, what the crucifiers thought was so ironically ridiculous and funny was deadly serious. The Jews joined the comedic game with Jesus as the target of their sarcasm and ridicule, maybe to assuage their guilt. And the Roman soldiers, of course, joined the comedic game with Jesus as their target, perhaps to assuage their boredom. But Luke describes for us the comedy at Calvary. How wrong can people be? How far from reality can they get? Let's listen to what Luke writes, starting in verse 33 of Luke 23. "And when they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right and the other on the left. But Jesus was saying, 'Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing.' And they cast lots, dividing up his garments among themselves. And the people stood by looking on. And even the rulers were sneering at him, saying, 'He saved others. Let him save himself, if this is the Christ of God, his chosen one.' And the soldiers also mocked him, coming up to him, offering him sour wine and saying, 'Since you are the King of the Jews, save yourself.' Now there was also an inscription above him, 'This is the King of the Jews.' And one of the criminals who were hanged there was hurling abuse at him, saying, 'You are the Christ, aren't you? Save yourself and us.'" There are three verbal actions described here: sneering, mocking, and hurling abuse. And they defined for us the attitude of the crowd, both the Jews and the Romans. All of them throwing scorn at Jesus. There are three statements that reinforce the intent of those three actions. Three snide, sarcastic, mocking, ironic statements. He saved others. Can't he save himself? Since you are the Son of God, save yourself and us. You are the Christ, aren't you? Save yourself and us. All intended as sarcasm at this laughable claim that was placed above his head, this is the King of the Jews. It was actually more than just their taunts that makes this a comedy. They had staged this comedy very carefully. They had enthroned Jesus like a king is enthroned above the people, only on a cross. They had placed on his head a crown, not a gold crown, but a crown of thorns, digging into his brow, sending blood streaming down his face. And then, in their diabolical comedy, they had crucified one thief on the right and one on the left. This is to parody a king who has on his right and his left his two leading courtiers, the second and the third most honorable people in the court. And so they put two criminals, one on each side of this king, as if they were his most respected courtiers. And then they offer him mock royal wine, as if doing their duty to serve the need of the monarch. And it didn't just start there. He had been wearing the crown of thorns for a while. And earlier, when he was in Pilate's judgment hall, they had put a mock robe on him, a mock royal robe on him, and they had put a scepter in his hand, a reed, and they had hailed him as a king and then taken the reed and beat him in the head with it and spit on him to show their disdain for the notion that this was a king. The whole joke really kind of started there, and then it began to escalate, and the Romans really turned it into a full-grown comedic melodrama. And it was all under the title, "This is the King of the Jews." What a laugh. The Jews laughed at it. The cross to them, Paul says, was a stumbling block. There was no way that their Messiah, that the Son of God, would ever be crucified. It was a joke to think of him as their king, their Messiah, a crucified man, crucified by their archenemies, the pagan, idolatrous Romans. It was equally ludicrous for the Romans, who saw a crucified God as foolishness, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1, impossible to believe. He claimed to be a king, he had no army. He claimed to be a king, he had no entourage. He claimed to be a king, he had no territory. He claimed to be a king, he conquered no one ever. What a joke. What a joke. And so they extended the joke into a full parody, and it was all just a big laugh. And they were so cruel in their comedy as to cast these sarcastic insults in the face of the crucified Christ. This was not a time for laughing. If you go back to verse 27, there were following Jesus on the way to the cross, a great multitude of the people, and among them women who were mourning and lamenting him. They were the official, dutiful, hired mourners who went along at events like this. But Jesus, turning to them in verse 28, said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and your children." This is not only a not a time to laugh. This is, in fact, a time for weeping, and not weeping for me, but weeping for yourselves because you have rejected me and God has rejected you. You better come to the cross with the right attitude. You don't want to laugh at your own eternal expense. Given the brutal character of crucifixion to start with, it should have been enough that Jesus was crucified without adding insult to injury and turning it into a joke and mocking him as he hung there in agony. Now, let's go back to verse 33. When they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right and the other on the left. Do I need to say to you that the New Testament is extremely restrained in how it describes the crucifixion of Jesus? Extremely restrained. Three Greek words. There they crucified him. Four words in English. That's all it says. There they crucified him. That's all it says. That's all it says in Matthew. That's all it says in Mark. That's all it says in Luke. And that's all it says in John. There are no details at all. None. Not about the hammers, not about the nails, not about anything physical whatsoever. Just three words. There they crucified him. Why is there not a further explanation of what this involved? Because to all the readers at the time the New Testament was written, they knew well what it was to be crucified. Crucifixion was common. We're told that as many as 30,000 people were crucified in the land of Israel around the time of Christ. 30,000. And the Romans always crucified them in public places along highways and on hills so that everybody would see the results of rebellion against Rome. They were well aware of what a crucifixion involved. No need to describe it. And there's no need for the Bible writer to describe Jesus and the actual crucifixion that he endured because it would have been exactly the same as everybody else endured. I probably need to remind you, although it's very obvious, that it says there they crucified him and the criminals. Whatever they did to him, they did to them. So the crucifixion of Jesus Christ is not a solitary experience for him, not by any means. There were tens of thousands of people who were crucified in the ancient world till it was finally outlawed in the 3rd or 4th century AD. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, were crucified. And in one way or another, it was the same for all of them. So the Bible is not concerned to give us details about the actual physical elements of it, for that's not the point. And that was very familiar to everyone. Crucifixion goes back, actually, to the 500s BC, 6th century. Seems to have been invented by the Persians. Darius crucifies 3,000 Babylonians. It's the first time we read about it. Alexander the Great, in the great Greek Empire, crucified 2,000 citizens of the city of Tyre in vengeance over the way they treated him and put them up on crosses along the shore for everyone to see. Around 100 BC, Alexander Janius crucified 800 Pharisees and made their wives and children watch them be crucified. The Romans came to power in 63 BC and used crucifixion extensively and perfected it as a fine art of torture. In 70 AD, when the Romans did conquer Israel and destroyed the temple and slaughtered the Jews, historians say that Titus used so many crosses to crucify Jews they ran out of lumber. Crucifixion was very common. It didn't need an explanation. But the Jews couldn't comprehend that their Messiah would be crucified. He was to come as a conqueror, not one conquered. And especially that he would be crucified by being rejected by the leaders of Israel and then executed by pagan idolatrous Romans. This is not their Messiah. This is an agent from Satan who does what he does by the power of Satan. And he died a common death like tens of thousands of other low-life, riff-raff, common criminals, for crucifixion reserved only for them. This was so impossible an idea that Jesus was truly the King of the Jews that for them it was an absolute joke. The joke lingered, by the way, after Calvary. On my several visits to the city of Rome, I'm always fascinated when I'm able to do it to go over to the Palatine Hill near Circus Maximus and to go into what was once a guardhouse for Roman soldiers. And in the guardhouse, there is some ancient graffiti that goes back to the early centuries. The graffiti pictures, literally scraped into the stone, a crucified body of a man with the head of a jackass. And below the crucified man with the head of a jackass is a Christian bowing down. And the graffiti says, "Alexamenos worships his God." What a joke. What a joke. Crucified God. Nothing more than worshiping a jackass. Justin Martyr, Christian apologist, in his first apology, A.D. 152, summarized the view of Christ that was held by people in the world, and essentially they thought it was a joke. They say, writes Justin, "Our madness consists in this, that we give to a crucified man a place equal to the unchangeable and eternal Creator God." End quote. So if you think a crucified man is the eternal Creator God, you are a fool. And that is a joke. It was sheer insanity to the murderers of Jesus to consider Him any different than others who were crucified. In fact, for the Jews, His crucifixion sealed the fact that He was not the Messiah, because Deuteronomy 21:23 says, "Cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree, cursed by God." Anyone, therefore, who was crucified was treated with contempt, treated with disdain. It was reserved for the worst and the lowest, the social pariahs, the outcasts. And so when they came to the cross, typically they came to the cross with scorn. And the idea that Jesus claimed to be God's anointed King and Messiah was just laughable, so bizarre, so ludicrous, and so ridiculous that they managed to turn the whole thing into a comic melodrama. For them, a man like Jesus claiming to be a king only demonstrated that he belonged in an asylum for the insane. However, he was king, and one person recognized it. Go down to verse 42. One of the two thieves who was put in a position to be part of the comedy said, "Jesus, remember me when you come in or into your kingdom." He could see through the joke. He could see through the farce, the parody, the vaudeville to the truth. For the moment, Jesus looks to be a prince of fools. How wrong an assessment that is. Back to verse 33, when they came to the place called the Skull. We don't know where that place is. There is a traditional site. There is a more contemporary site. There's discussion about whether it's one or the other or perhaps another site. We don't know. Nothing in the New Testament says it was a hill. Nothing. But it was traditionally the Roman way to crucify people in an elevated place so that people could see them they wanted to make their point. So traditionally, it has been considered that it was some kind of a high ground, and it was called the skull perhaps because it had some kind of configuration that represented or resembled a skull. That's all we know. We do know it was called the skull, Golgotha in Aramaic or Hebrew, Calvaria in Latin or Calvary. Some have said it was called the skull because the skulls of the people who were crucified were lying around. I don't think so. I don't think the Jews would have a place where skulls were lying all over the place. But it's interesting that its name is associated with the gruesome reality of what went on there, death. And there they crucified him. That was the ultimate blasphemy. And it's amazing when you look at that account and you realize that Luke says virtually nothing about the actual crucifixion of Jesus. Just there they crucified him. But all his words have to do with the attitude of the people. Because he's painting for us this final apostasy of Israel. The horror of such blasphemy to turn the Son of God into a joke. And this also speaks to the issue of the grace of God, because it was from that cross, in the middle of the comedy, that Jesus said, "Father, what? Forgive them." Was there ever a greater illustration of grace?
The King of the universe, unlawfully convicted, relentlessly tortured, and his suffering merely a joke to his tormentors. Humbling Truth from John MacArthur today as he's launched the study called The Crucifixion Chronicle, here on Grace to You. Now, as John said, this series that he's introduced to you today is introducing you to soldiers, criminals, even innocent faces in the crowd of Jesus' crucifixion, and to see how Calvary changed those eyewitnesses and how it should change the way that you live and worship Christ. Get a copy of the study, The Crucifixion Chronicle. It's in CD form, also MP3 format. Contact us today. That CD album is reasonably priced and shipping is free. To order it, call toll-free 1-800-55-GRACE or go to our website, gty.org. Download the messages from the study of The Crucifixion Chronicle free of charge. You can receive that in the MP3 format online at gty.org. Now, let me also encourage you to pick up a copy of the flagship resource, the MacArthur Study Bible, available in the New King James, the New American Standard, and the English Standard versions of the biblical text, as well as many non-English translations. This is an ideal resource to help you better understand Easter truth, as well as the truth about everything else. An ideal gift, too, for a new believer, a veteran saint, any student of Scripture. To order your copy of the MacArthur Study Bible, call toll-free 1-800-55-GRACE or shop online at gty.org. And now on behalf of John MacArthur and the entire staff, I'm your host, Carl Miller. Thanking you for tuning in today. Please come back tomorrow as John explains why Jesus allowed himself to be subjected to excruciating physical suffering and verbal mocking. It's another half hour of unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, on the next Grace to You.